back to midfield on the far side. He's got the ball up to the 45, far side 40, a seam to the 35, balls a man to the 30, breaks it to the near side 25, watch out, to the 20, near side 10, he's gone, touchdown, Washington Redskins.
This is Burgundy and Gold Flashback. Now, here's Mike Richmond.
You are listening to Burgundy and Gold Flashback, where the tradition of a storied NFL franchise, the Washington Redskins, stays alive. I'm Mike Richmond, author of the Redskins Encyclopedia and the Washington Redskins Football Vault. My website is redskinshistorian.com. That's redskinshistorian.com. My guest was an indestructible Redskins guard from 1976 through 82. He played with multiple injuries. The Redskins called him a tough, hard-nosed battler. Spent 13 seasons in all in the NFL and has a ring from the Redskins' win in Super Bowl 17. Ron Saul, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. You're a good man, a Redskin historian. You are it.
Well, Ron, you're a good man yourself, and you've been a guest in the past on my TV show, Burgundy and Gold Magazine, and I've interviewed you multiple times on Redskins history. So really appreciate it, and people are going to hear that you're witty and charismatic to go along with being that tough, hard-nosed football player. So, hey, it was great seeing you and Robin, by the way, recently at Alumni Weekend.
Oh, it was good seeing you again, Mike. It's been a while since I've seen you.
Yeah, we had a great conversation on the sidelines before the game, and I'm glad that you guys at the Redskins were able to bring home a win that day, 19-17 over Tennessee. And how about those Redskins this week, having beaten the Cowboys 20-17, they snapped a streak of 8 straight NFC East losses. And for the Redskins, this year was their second straight win. They're now 3-5 and could conceivably be 5-5 after upcoming games against the Vikings and the Bucks. It was good to see solid contributions all around, offense, defense, and special teams. Let me ask you, what did you like and what didn't you like?
You know, Mike, I really thought the defense to hold the Cowboys, it's been scoring 30 or better points a game almost. I mean, hey, they did a great, great job. That's one of the best defensive performances I've seen. Don't get me wrong. Scoring 20 points is okay. And George Allen used to say, along with Joe Gibbs, if we score 21 points, hopefully we'll win the game. But the defense, that's the best I've seen them play. Those two corners were unbelievable.
Well, Amerson and Breland, yes, I agree that they shut the Cowboys receivers down. And, Dez Bryant didn't do anything. I mean, they're all-pro receivers. So, also, you got to give props to guys like Keenan Robinson, Redskins linebacker. He played a hell of a game. Those guys up front played great. They put pressure on Romo. And then Haslett devised an amazing plan with all these multiple varied blitzes. So that was great to see.
Yeah, that's all you saw was blitzes all day. I mean, what Romo get sacked 5 times or something? I mean, it was unbelievable. For them to go to Dallas is, in the 13 years I played, whether I was with Houston for 6 years or the Redskins for 7, to play the Cowboys, I mean, in Dallas was a tough, tough chore. And, hey, for Dallas to have the record that they had and then to just lay an egg down there, I mean, it was great. And I'm not saying lay an egg. They just couldn't get it done against the Redskins. That was the best performance I've seen of the Redskins all year.
Right. Well, what I've been saying all along about the Cowboys is this, okay? I know they were on a 6-game win streak, and they've been playing really good. They've been getting contributions from all phases of their team, offense, defense, and special teams. But, again, it's October, and with the Dallas Cowboys, when December rolls around, They look mediocre, and I know that may be a little bit of a simplistic way of looking at it, but, I think it was a little early for them, and I think the Redskins really exposed some of their flaws, and also, I didn't like the fact that Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner, came down on the sideline and was whispering in the ear of the coach. I just thought that made Jones look bad, and it was just really embarrassing. What did you think of that?
You know, how many owners are general managers? I mean, this guy goes out. There's only one that I knew. He was with Oakland. And you know who I'm talking about.
Al Davis.
Al Davis understood the game totally. And you know, he could be a general manager and an owner. Because he just, like I say, he really, really knew what was going on. And Oakland did very, very well while he was alive. But Jerry Jones, it's a joke. It's a joke. I mean, the guy needs to sit back and enjoy making the money he's making because he's a Cowboys owner. But, you know, for him, hey, when he had the tuna coaching for him, you know, if the quarterback doesn't drop the ball on a field goal, they end up going and playing the Steelers in the Super Bowl that year. And it was Romo who dropped the ball. I mean, it was a chip shot and a field goal. But, you know, and then, so what's he do? He gets rid of the tuna. The tuna wants to leave because he can't stand Jerry Jones. But Jerry thinks that it's him that makes things happen. And when was the last time the Cowboys were in the Super Bowl?
I can't even think that far back. It was 1995, I believe. The thing about Jerry Jones, I want to say something about Dan Snyder. I mean, I know he takes a bad rap, and people have said over the years that he's meddlesome and micromanages. Well, he doesn't do things like that. He's never been down on the sidelines talking to a coach during the course of a game like that. And I just think that's really, really inappropriate for an owner to be doing. And like you say, I mean, how many owners are general managers? I think Jerry Jones should just do his job and stay out of the spotlight and, you know, let the guys who are talented enough to do the other jobs of coaches and the real GMs, let them do what they do best.
I got the most respect for the owner of New England. This guy does not interfere whatsoever. And I love Jack Kent Cook. Jack Kent Cook says, Joe, you're the man. I'll support you in every way, but you know, you are the one that has to win the game. And you're the one that's going to take it too. And I'll be the support. I'll make sure you got enough money to get there. But it's up to you. And Cook was just a great, great owner. And I was very, very lucky to be able to play for the guy.
Right. He was a hell of a businessman and a great manager of people. And even though he was feared, he was respected at the same time. So I really admired that about him as well. Hey, I want to just talk about something a little different. We were having that conversation on the sidelines before the Tennessee game about concussions in the NFL. And I really liked some of your opinions on that. And I was wondering if you could expound on it. In particular, we were talking about the increase in rhetoric in terms of criticism directed at the NFL regarding concussions. So what is your opinion about that? Is that warranted? I think we agree that it's all part of the game. It's a violent game. People know it's going to happen. But what's your viewpoint on that?
You know what? To me, when I come in the league, I knew that I could possibly get a concussion. And they give me a 1,000-pound crush helmet. And you know, the thing is Mike, I knew I could get a broken arm. I knew I'd get my knee tore up. I knew that, you know, like I said, I didn't sign up for badminton. I didn't sign up for badminton. I mean, I knew I was going into a brutal, brutal game. And that's what the fans are looking for, is people. You know, the 3,000 or so folks out there and the 32 teams that really, really are special in the way they hit and the way they beat on each other. You know, that's it. I mean, pretty soon, I mean, Teams wrestling is tougher than football. I wish the rules back then were like they are today. I'd still be playing at 60. Come on, Mike. It's just not right. I mean, you know, you look at Merriweather. He got suspended 2 or 3 times in the league. And, you know, those were normal hits whenever I played. And I wouldn't know what to do. I remember the first game I played in was against Chicago Bears. And a guy named Dick Butkus was the middle linebacker for the Chicago Bears. And I went out and I hit him under the chin, which I would have got called for that. You know, I punched him under the chin and come across and picked up the buffoon. Because I set him up for Walt Suggs. Walt Suggs, Butkus started towards me and Suggs ear-holed him and he went to the ground. I get up after cutting buffoon and Butkus is kicking Suggs like, "You rotten son of a gun." The ref standing 5 feet from him. And I said, "Hey, ref, you going to call that?" And the ref turned around and walked away. That was football. That's what we wanted. Now it's like, oh, God, concussions. Now, I can understand the CTE with the brain damage. And, you know, that's too bad. What happened to several of the players, Mike Webster from Pittsburgh.
Dave Duerson.
Yep. All the, you know, that happens. But that's the game that we chose. You know, what percentage of the population gets to play professional football? Less than 100 of 1% of the population that go out for it. You know, that's football.
Right, such a tiny percentage of the population. And, I mean, how much are you going to police this game? The point I was making is, if you strip the game of its ingredients, of the violence and the hitting, and you're going to water down the game so much that it's not going to be as entertaining to the fans.
Right. And you know, these are guys that probably wouldn't be making $35,000 or $40,000 a year if they would have graduated, even if they graduated and making $65,000. Now they're making millions. And, you know, Mike, I looked up the other day on the injury list of the teams. There were 2 guys out with fingers. I mean, good God, fingers, Mike. And then a couple turf toes, maybe probable to play in the game. I'm going, you know, If you're making that kind of money, how do you get out of the game? Mike, I remember, and this is God's truth, I played against Bob Lilly in 1974 when they drained my knee. They took 102 shoes off of before the game, shot me up in the knee, taped me up, and run, played the first half. Come back in, they cut the tape off after the first half, drained another 80 cc's off of it. When I played the second half, we ended up winning the game. Bob Lilly got 2 tackles in the whole game. Come back in after the game, cut the tape off, drained I don't know how many cc's off of my knee. But, you know, at the end, and the trainer taps me on the shoulder and says, "See you tomorrow, Saul." The way we were. Now, good God, these guys, it's sickening to see football played the way it is today. For me, anyway, you played no matter what, unless they had to carry you off the field.
Well, I know you had 7 knee operations in your career, torn cartilage. You also had a broken nose. You had hip pointers. I mean, there was like such an assortment of injuries that you had, and I know you played your way through them. I mean, it's really admirable the way you did that and the way other guys did that as well.
Mike, I was up for All-Pro in 1979. That's the only year that I made it through. The whole year. I'll tell you what. I go out, I play 5, 6, 8 games, boom, get in knee. They'd operate on it. I'd be rehabbing it. And come training camp, I'd be third string on the depth chart because they'd say, we don't know if Saul can play anymore. Before the game started, after the 6 exhibition games, I'd be starting again. I'd go out, play 6, 7, 8, 10 games, boom, get another knee. Go out the next year, they say, well, Saul, we got to invite him back because he played. And you know, I'd end up, before the season started, I'd be starting again. Boom, go out and get another knee. Boom. You know, and I hear these people saying, well, kids with concussions, they get hurt. I've had guys come up and say to me, you know, I might have played in the NFL, but I got a knee injury. I go, oh, yeah, sorry to hear that. You know, poor you. Yeah, for seven, 8 years out of the NFL, and my 13 years, I had my knee operated on every time. I didn't care. I wanted to play the game. It's how much heart and how much guts you got to be able to play the game.
You played for the love of the game.
You got the inmates running the prison. When I see I'm possibly out with a finger, I'm going, who in the hell are you kidding? It's just not right. I mean, good God, you come in the NFL to play no matter what.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, Ron. You're preaching to the choir. I fully agree with what you're saying. Right now, we need to go to break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about your playing career in the NFL. Here's This Week in Redskins History.
Hey, it's Mike Richmond, the official Redskins historian and author of the Washington Redskins Football Vault and the Redskins Encyclopedia. From the pages of my books comes This Week in Redskins History. The Redskins were eyeing a 4-4 record when they trailed the Lions by 21 points in the third quarter at the Silverdome on November 4th, 1990. But Jeff Rutledge, a journeyman quarterback, replaced Stan Humphries and played the game of his life. He completed his first 8 passes as part of a 30-of-42, 363-yard, 1-touchdown performance. He also ran for a score. His 40-yard pass to Art Monk in overtime sparked a drive climaxed by Chip Lowmiller's field goal that gave the Redskins a 41-38 win. Rutledge was named NFC Offensive Player of the Week. The Skins tallied a team record 674 yards, and their comeback from a 21-point deficit tied a team mark. For more on Redskins history, check out my website at redskinshistorian.com. That's redskinshistorian.com. I'm Mike Richmond for This Week in Redskins History.
Welcome back to Burgundy and Gold Flashback. I'm Redskins historian Mike Richmond, back with Ron Saul, an Iron Man Redskins guard from 1976 through 82. Ron, thanks again for coming on the show.
Good to be here, Mike. You're a good man. You really know the history of the Redskins.
Thank you very much. You played your college ball at Michigan State, and you were an All-American, an academic All-American there, playing guard and tackle, first-team All-Big Ten player. I want to get your thoughts on Maryland playing in the Big Ten now, local school, and they've already beaten a few Big Ten teams. What is your opinion on that?
You know, Mike, it's neat that they get to do it. And I'll be November 15th. They play Michigan State, and I'm going to be in a suite at the game. And I'm looking forward to it, you know. But Maryland has opened up a new letter there whenever they're going into the Big Ten. It's a different game. Usually the guys are pretty tough. You know, they found out, Maryland found out against Wisconsin, it was not an easy game. And where do they get to Michigan State?
Right, right.
I'll be surprised if they do well against Michigan State. Because I was up there, they look really, really good. A couple weeks ago in Michigan State, I was up there, and I'll tell you what.
Well, they're ranked really high now, aren't they?
Yes, very high. I think they're 6th, 7th, 8th, right in that in that deal. And you know, hey, Maryland. But you know, I've supported Maryland the whole time I've been here because I really want to see them win. But now that they're going to play my alma mater, makes it a little tough, Mike.
By the way, I'll be at that game too because Maryland is my alma mater, so I'm really looking forward to that. You mentioned earlier that you started your career with the Houston Oilers 1970, which was the first year of the AFL-NFL merger, and you played there for 6 seasons. And then George Allen traded for you. He traded a 3rd, 6th, and 7th round picks to get you just before the 76 season. And you played for him for 2 seasons. I know you loved the man. Can you give me a few of your best anecdotes about him, maybe stories that have never been told or just gems about him?
George Allen? Let me tell you what, he traded for me, but I got to tell you this. Bum Phillips came to me, and I got all the respect in the world for him. He came to me and said, Ron, there's 2 teams that want you bad. He says, Norm Van Brocklin and George in Atlanta want you real bad, and a guy named George Allen in Washington. He says, they've given up a 3rd, a 5th, and a 6th round draft to us. I said, my God. He said, now you're our starter. We're deep in guards, but I won't trade you if it'll upset your family. Usually in the NFL, Mike, and that's the truth. I'm sitting with Bump, and he says, I won't trade you if it'll upset your family because you've been here for 6 years, and they're used to Houston and everything. And he said, but I said, Bum would help the team if I get traded. He says, well, of course. He said, you know, that's a lot of draft choices they've given up for. I mean, Aquan Bolt goes to San Francisco for a 6th rounder. You know, they're trading a 3rd, a 5th, and a 6th rounder for me. And he said they both have said, you know, George said I'll give a 3rd. Van Brocklin said a 3rd. George said a 5th, Van Brocklin said a 5th, George said a 6th, Van Brocklin. So I said, okay, Bum, I'll accept the trade, but please do not let me go to Atlanta because all Van Brocklin does down there is scrimmage and they don't win any game. They scrimmage in practice all the time and they don't win any game. I'd like to go to Washington. He said, okay, it's a done deal. I ended up here with George Allen. George was a defensive coach, totally. And, you know, I got all the respect for George. He's great. He was a great, great, great guy. But anyway, I ended up here, and it worked out fine. And George was a good guy to play for. He was a real professional, and we won a lot of games. I became part of the Overhill gang. With Ron McDowell and
Pat Fisher.
No, yeah, Pat Fisher and Salvi and all that stuff. And hey, it was good getting here because we won a lot of games with him. We won 10 games our first year in 76.
You were also a charter member of the Hogs too, and let me just say that you played 2 seasons for George Allen, 76 and 77, and then you played for Jack Pardee for 3 seasons while he was here, and then 81 when Joe Gibbs was here, you had 1 season under your belt with him. Then you got injured prior to the 82 season, but you were still on the roster, so you were a charter member of the Hogs. I was wondering if you could share that story about the origin of the name Hogs. How did that come about?
You know what? What happened, Mike, was Joe Bugle said, look, got all these great defensive teams, you know, defensive line, the Purple Gang, the Doomsday Defense, the Looney Tunes, the Steel Curtain. And he says, you know what? Nobody has ever named an offensive line. He says, you know what we're going to do? We're going to become the Hogs. He said, because we root around, we get after them, we do everything. And he said, you know what? You guys are going to end up taking us to the Super Bowl. And darn, if in 82, when they took that picture of the Hogs, if we didn't end up going there. Because, Mike, at that time we had Alvin Garrett, Virgil Say, and downtown Charlie Brown, because Armand got hurt with four games left to go in the season. We went into the playoffs, and don't get me wrong, these guys were good players, but probably a little less talent at wide receiver. But almost every team that goes in has, you know, great one or two wide receivers that are just standout. Deals, you know, and we ended up going to the Super Bowl on John Riggins' tail, because Riggo, he was the man. I mean, you know, that's it.
He had more than 600 yards rushing in that postseason, 82.
Yeah, but you know what? We had Alvin Garrett and Virgil Say and downtown Charlie Brown were good receivers. But they weren't anything like some of the receivers on other teams that just run away with stuff, you know? So we ended up winning that Super Bowl with the Hogs and John Reagan. I mean, that was it. I mean, our middle linebacker was, our middle linebacker was Neil Okowitz. He was all of 6 foot. We had defensive linemen that really, what we were a team. We were so together. We rooted for each other. When the defense was in there, we were pulling for them. When the offense was in, they were there for us. And it was called a team effort. And good things will happen when you really got a team. Today, what I'm seeing is so many individual players. You know, they're about themselves and this and that. You know who I am. You know who I am. Keep your mouth shut, kid. Go out and do your job, and don't be mouthing off.
And they dance after sacks, and they even when they're down by 30 points, and they get ACL injuries, season-ending ACL injuries. So,
yeah.
Well, I want to thank you again.
You know, make a tackle and they start duck walking across the field, and the next play the runner runs by them for the next 4 or 5 plays in a row. Don't do anything then. It wasn't about that. I got all the respect for Riggo in the sense that when he crossed that goal line, Mike, he was looking for the ref to hand him the ball. He wasn't spiking. He wasn't trying to jump over the act like you've been there before, you know. I see this stuff going on today and people doing splits and all this. It's crazy.
He was all business. Riggins was all business. He was just a no-nonsense guy. But, Ron, we got to run. I want to thank you again very much for coming on the show. And look forward to seeing you and Robin at an upcoming alumni event. I'm sure we're going to cross paths there.
Absolutely, Mike. And hey, God bless, and thank you so much for giving me a call.
Sounds great. And many thanks to my audience for listening to Burgundy and Gold Flashback. And thanks to my producer, Mike Engel, for his work running the board. I'm Mike Richmond. My website is RedskinsHistorian.com. That's RedskinsHistorian.com. For now, hail to the Redskins.